All right, so today I want to focus on a new story. I think one of the most mysterious stories you find in Chumash, because it seems to be a very important story, but very little said about it, which is on page 49 in the Stone Chumash. It's the story of the Tower of Babel. We call the Dor HaFlaga, the generation of the dispersion.
What pasuk?
It's Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, pasuk Aleph, the first pasuk there. Basically, the story spans 9 psukim total, and doesn't give us all that much information, but yet a lot comes out of this story. So I guess to review, we mentioned last week how the Rambam describes the purpose of the story overall. There's a lot to learn from the story. The Rambam says the purpose of the story is so we understand how the world came to be as we see it nowadays. Meaning if everybody, if after the flood, there are only 6 people, 8 people survived, 8 people, Noah and his sons and their wives all survived, so then how did the world end up being so populated, and how did people scatter about all different countries? I mean, everyone was kind of together, everyone spoke the same language, how did languages and cultures all develop? So the Rambam says, that's the story right here. And the Tower of Babel was a story that shows that Hashem had to proactively scatter people around and change their languages, and that's how the world became populated as we know it, and that's how people became the cultures that are out there. That's how cultures changed and languages changed. So that's the Rambam's general approach to the story. Let's read the story together inside the text, and then we'll try to go through and describe some points about what it really means. So again, page 49, chapter 11, verse 1. The whole earth was of one language and of common purpose. So again, we're after the flood. Everybody was all the same family. So everyone spoke the same language and seemed to have, you know, one culture, one thought process. Everybody was pretty much the same in terms of how they lived their lives. And it came to pass, when they migrated from the east, they found a valley in the land of Shinar. Shinar is another term for Babel, Babylonia. And they settled there. They said to another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them in fire." And the bricks served them as stone, and the bitumen, I'm not sure what that is.
Bitumen, it's a coal. What is that? Coal type thing.
Okay. I mean, the Hebrew term is chemar, which usually look at as some sort of like clay, or something along those lines. So that served them as mortar. And they said, Come let us build a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed across the whole earth. So that's all, so it seems like a pretty neutral idea to build a big tower. We don't describe here any sort of sin. Nothing seems to have any sort of sinister intent over here. This is, it seems to be no big problem. All they said, let's make a name for ourselves and build a tall tower. But yet, there's something wrong over here. Something very wrong. Hashem descended to look at the city and tower, which the sons of man built. So Hashem descended, which means that Hashem wanted to, you know, gave special focus to what was happening over here. And Hashem said, "Behold, there are one people with one language for all. And this they begin to do. And now should it not be withheld from them all they propose to do?" So Hashem says, how could they do this? You know, this is what they want to do with their power of being one language, one people. I have to stop it. Come, let us descend and there confuse their language, that they should not understand one another's language. So Hashem says, let us, meaning, you know, with the malach, with the angels, let us descend and confuse the language so they don't understand each other. So something went amiss over here. Something was wrong. It's not really clear what at all was wrong. Hashem didn't like it. Hashem said, therefore I have to change their languages, confuse languages, and disperse them. And Hashem dispersed them from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. That's why it was called Babel, because it was there that Hashem confused the language of the whole earth. This is one of those places where translation really throws you off, because why does Babel mean confusing languages? The answer is in Hebrew, because mebalbel is to confuse. So when you read the English, it's called Babel because there they Hashem confused languages. It doesn't really make sense. But the answer is, it's called Babel because in Hebrew, the word Babel is the word of mixing or confusing. And because Hashem confused languages of the whole earth, that's why they called it Babel, Babylonia. And from there, Hashem scattered them over the face of the whole earth. I always wonder if the English word Babel comes from that also. People are babbling, you know. Could be it's connected. Who knows? That's the story. That's it. That's the whole story. So this is a famous story. It's an important story. It changed the face of history. It spans 9 verses in the Torah, and we have very little information about what the problem was. What did they do wrong? Why did Hashem get so upset about this? And why was the result the scattering of people over the face of the earth and the confusion of languages? Now, where did that come from? So we have to look at the story and try to pick out the clues here first to figure what are the clues we have in the story to figure out the problem. That's the first question. And I would say it seems to be the opposite. I mean, they're unified. Unity usually we look at as a great trait. They're one language, one people, one common purpose. Everyone's working together. It sounds great. And they actually got along. And they actually tried to accomplish something for the human race all together as one. Isn't that what we dream about? Isn't that what we always discuss? If only we could have world unity? Isn't that something that would be an ideal? So what was the issue? So just to point out maybe some of the clues we have. All they say, the one quote we have from them, we have two quotes really, but the quote that I think is most significant is in verse 4. They said, "Come, let us build us a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves." So that phrase is very important. They want to make a name for themselves. Now, what does that mean exactly? Naseh lanu shem in Hebrew, make a name for ourselves. That seems to imply they want to somehow, portray their greatness, their might, their skill. And who are they making a name for? I mean, if they all work together as one, they all work together and unified, towards who are they trying to make this statement? That's the other question. Usually if I say that I want to make a name for myself, it's so you recognize me as being so great. But if we're all doing it together, then who are we making a name for? Who are we trying to get to recognize us for who we are? And where's that coming from? That's one clue. There's another clue which you find in the Hebrew. This is more of a clue you find in a medrash. It says in the Hebrew, "Vayhiben nasam mikedem." This is verse 2. When they traveled from the east. And this phrase is used in Bereshis a few times. And leaving from the east, the rabbis always see as a reference to leaving Hashem. The word kedem is east, but kedem also means kadmon, the first one, the early one. And it means they left kadmono sh'olam, they left Hashem, the one who preceded the world. So there was some rebellion here against Hashem, which is referenced in the Psukim, through what they did. And then the question is, what they do that was so terrible that they rebelled against Hashem? Where did that come from? And certainly that's not clear in the simple reading. In the simple reading, it means they traveled from the east. But there's definitely a reference from going from the east. They're leaving Hashem to some other goal. So again, the big question is, what did they do wrong? And why was the result the scattering of the people and the changing of languages? So I want to maybe go through a few different commentaries and describe what was the issue here. So let's begin with the Rashbam. The Rashbam is somebody who is known to really take just the most basic, simple understanding. He doesn't draw into his commentary any sort of midrashim or any sort of deeper ideas, just the basic text. So the Rashbam says that it's very simple. Hashem, back at the creation of the world, said, "I want the land to be filled with people. Milu es ha'aretz, fill the land, fill the earth." And if people start trying to convene around one city and one landmark, this tower, so they're going against God's whole purpose in the creation of the world. Hashem doesn't want us to be all focused on one place. Hashem wants the world to be populated. It says a little tov b'ra'ah l'shem yitzar. Hashem didn't create the world for nothing. Hashem created it to be settled. Hashem wants the world settled. So therefore, people are now going to stick together and stay in one spot, focused on one focal point. Hashem says it's going against my purpose in creation to populate the world, therefore I have to scatter them. So it wasn't, according to the Rashbam, necessarily, it wasn't a sinful behavior, as it were. They didn't do anything which was, just terribly wrong. But this whole attitude was against the purpose of creation, which is bad, but people didn't have a sinister motivation in this. It wasn't like, we're going to go against God. According to the Rashbam, it's just that they wanted to stick together, and Hashem said, that's not what I wanted out of the world. I want the world to be populated. I want people to be scattered about. So that's what he did. He scattered them about. That's one explanation. But other commentaries take it further and discuss that there was sinful behavior here as well. There was intentions here that were no good. So I'm going to share some of those for a second. The Sforno points out the following point. The Sforno says that the tower was meant to create one ruler over the world, being Nimrod. Nimrod, who's introduced to us also in Parshas Noach, he was the mighty king at the time. And Nimrod was the one who was sort of the head of this generation. And Nimrod said, "I want to have a tower in the center of where we live, of the place we inhabit, so that everybody could focus on this one tower and crown me as the leader." Furthermore, as Sforno says, it was sort of a tribute to idolatry. This whether they were worshiping their king or whether they were putting idols into this tower, it became a focal point for the world that they should have one ruler and they should serve avodah zarah, they should serve idols. If there's one rule of the world, as Sforno says, whether it be a human being, whether it be idols, But it's not Hashem, they got a big problem. Because they're not focusing that Hashem is the one king of the world. Then it's worse than typical idolatry. I mean, idolatry existed, you know, still exists and existed for thousands of years. But idolatry doesn't say that there's one set of idols that are the kings. Idolatry is that every nation has their own thing they do. You know, Rome had their idols, and Greece had their idols, and you know, everyone had their own idolatry. Everyone had their own gods to worship. So once you have in the world lots of options, as it were, so then people search and find truth. And people, this gave Abraham his opportunity to step up and say, well, I know the truth. There's one God on top of it all. But if everybody's unified around one purpose, and they have one life perspective, and they see the world through one religion, as it were, one type of idolatry, so no one's searching for other options. If people are already debating their religions, then you can enter the debate as well. If there's no debate, if this is what everyone does, and that's it, and nothing else is acceptable, it's very hard to debate anything. I want to draw a parallel, and we'll see this, you know, as we go further through to the commentaries. You have a certain empires in modern times and in ancient times that they didn't allow freedom of thought or freedom of speech. You know, let's think about communist Russia. So you couldn't say what you wanted to. You couldn't think what you wanted to. You couldn't preach your own ideals. You had to preach the ideals of the state, or you would be killed or sent to Siberia, and that was it. There wasn't room for debate. There wasn't room for discussion. It wasn't allowed. There's one way to go, my way or the highway, and finished. That's how it was, and that's what brought their downfall at the end. But that's how they lived. That was the total culture of the country, of the empire. It's like this even nowadays in certain places. There's no freedom of speech. You can't debate ideas. You can't debate religion. You can't debate politics. No, you got to go the way of the rulers, or no, you're killed. You're put in jail. How do they treat you? The Tower of Babel, this generation was the same idea, according to many commentaries. They said, there's one way to go. This is it. And if you try anything else, not only are we not going to accept it, we're going to kill you for it. We're going to keep our eyes on every single individual out there in the world. We have one center point everyone's focused on. Everyone lives around the same area. And if you try to break away from our culture and our ideals, we're going to let you know that we don't approve, and that's going to lead to dire consequences. That was part of the concept of the Dor HaFlaga of this generation. But if the religions out there, if all the nations had their own religion they're debating, and at least there was discussion in the world of right and wrong, of true and false, there was free speech, as it were. So now there's a place that Avram can come in, and Avram can say, well, I discovered the one true God, and Avram has a place to debate. Avram can speak now. So according to the Sforno, an issue that came out of this wasn't just typical of Avodah Zarah, it wasn't just typical idolatry, but it was the fact that they were all focused on one style that didn't allow for anything else to come through. And that was precluding the opportunity for Abraham to step in and bring Hashem to the world. So therefore Hashem had to scatter them about, vary their cultures, you know, vary their ideals, vary their languages, and that allowed for Abraham to step in and say, no, there's one God who's on top of it all, and let's talk about it. And no one's going to kill him for that. Now Avram again, back in this generation, and Avram was thrown into a furnace for his beliefs. Avram was subject to this. Avram survived through a miracle, but Nimrod did throw Avram into the fiery furnace because he did preach something else. It wasn't just because of his monotheism, it was because it was something different than everyone else believed. Because he was being different, he was thrown into a furnace. The Malbim points out an interesting point. The Malbim says that when it says Nasam Mikan, they left from the east, as we said. So some understand it to mean they left from Hashem. The Malbim says the word Kedem also means the old ways. Now this was a culture that wanted to change the way life was lived in the past. Meaning until this point, from Noach's time until now, life was focused very much on a simple life, focused on family. The world wasn't yet so built up, wasn't so cultured quite yet. And people, kept themselves, did their own thing. This generation said, no, we're going to change the style of how people live. We're going to convene together, and we're going to build up an empire. We're going to become powerful. We're going to become great. And it was like a cultural revolution, as it were. It was the 60s all over again. That's how it was. The culture changed. They left the old ways, and they wanted to go to new ways. And they rejected the idea of family life, and they brought upon themselves the idea that we have to be one common culture and believe one common thing. And that was the thought process going through the Dor HaFlaga. Nasa Lanu Shame is that we as a human race, we want to have a great, mighty reputation in corresponding to who? Corresponding to Hashem. Said Hashem, we have power. We as humans, we have power. The human race convened together can do incredible things. And essentially, we don't need Hashem. No, we don't need that. We can do our own thing. That's part of the attitude. The Rashi says, quotes from a Medrash, and it says an astounding thing, which we have to explain a little bit. But Rashi says that they wanted to wage war on Hashem himself. I mean, they built the tower so they can climb up to the heavens, as it were, and wage war against God. Now, it sounds like a ridiculous statement. Rashi also says that they were thinking, we can stop another flood from occurring. We'll hold up the sky, as it were. Now, the sky is falling. You hold up the sky and prevent the flood. So these people weren't stupid, and it seems to be an outrageous statement. But the way we understand these types of statements are the following. They felt that we have the power to influence the way that God's going to run the world. You know, human beings are very powerful. And as it were, there's nothing we can't do if we bond together as one for one united purpose. That was their feeling. So yeah, even though God might want to do X, Y, or Z for the world, if the entire human race bands together, and they can influence the spiritual realms in the way that they influence our world. Because human beings are very powerful. And in a certain sense, we do influence the spiritual realms. But they were thinking we're trying to do it because we are so powerful, and we can sort of circumvent God. We can work around God because we have so much power as humans. We want to give ourselves a great reputation. We want to give ourselves power. And they were sort of, what they were trying to do is push the agenda of the human race against God. And their thought process, as it were, waging war against God doesn't mean they're going up there and fight him with, like, you know, swords and, you know, and bows and arrows. But it means that they're going to be able to persuade God to function differently. Because look at us. We're all together. We're doing this. And we can change the way you influence the world. That was some of the thought process which is there. And the Rambam says that exactly this point. They could influence the Kochav Mazalos, the stars, the constellations, which they felt had an impact on the world. They can influence that by building up this tower, banding together as one, and changing it, because all human beings came together. A further point is that, as we said before, they were trying to use this tower so they can keep watch on the entire world. No one can think differently than us. Everyone's got to think the same way. And we have this huge tower in the middle of the city, and we're going to station guards in the tower, and we're going to be watching you. Big Brother is watching. And that's what it was. It was really very similar to, you know, the Soviet Union in many ways, I think. You know, it's similar to the concept Big Brother is watching as well. The point of the tower was, the Siv says, the point of the tower was to watch people, and if they were not following suit and sticking to the party line, they'd be tossed into the fiery furnace. And that was the goal of the society. So there was a unity, but the unity didn't allow for individuality. I mean, there's always this struggle. Are you part of a group, or are you an individual? And it's something that every person struggles with. You know, do you kind of forge your own path, or do you just follow behind everyone else? And the real answer is, well, a little of both. You know, we have to have a society and a community that we belong to, and there's a standard of norms we try to live up to, but everyone of us are also unique, and we have to also forge our own path, and they have to, that's the combination of the two. It's been said that the Dor HaMabul, the generation of the flood, was all about the individual. Me, 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 my needs, I'm selfish, my pleasures, my money. The Dor HaFluga was all focused on the community, and the individual didn't matter. The rabbis teach us that when they're building this tower, if a person fell off and died, no one would care. If they dropped a brick, they'd all sit down and cry. Because what are they trying to portray by that? Because the individual doesn't matter. What matters is society. What matters is the group. It's the klal. It's the community. That's what really matters. Individuals are dispensable, but the tzibur, that's the most insignificant thing. And no one can dissent. You know, they're harnessing the power of mankind together as one. No one can argue, no one can dissent, no one can disagree, and if so, you're going to pay for it. It was a focus of the power of the human being, but not as individual, as a tzibur, as a whole. Again, which is true. A community has tremendous power and can do tremendous things, but you can never neglect the power of an individual as well. And individuals are valuable. And people are allowed to think their own thoughts. And you're allowed to discuss and debate, and that brings to healthy intellectual discoveries through that debate. If that's not allowed, then you end up again with the Soviet Russia and the like, you know, where societies where people are just totally squashed and can't express themselves. And that was really the Dor HaFluga. It was very much like that. It says that they found a valley and settled there, and they started making bricks. This seems to be the first time that the bricks were invented in history. Again, we're at the very beginning of Bereshis over here. They invented bricks. What's the significance of them building in a valley and inventing bricks? And the answer that the commentaries say is the following. If you're building with stone, So stones are a form that God formed, is made by God. A brick is a human creation, as it were. And we had to form the bricks. So they were focusing on humans versus God. And therefore said, we're not going to build with stones. That's God's stuff. We're going to show the might of the human being, and we're going to build with bricks. We're going to form them ourselves, and we're going to build up our own building blocks. And it's because it's totally from us. So too with the valley. If you're building on top of a mountain, so you're letting God do half the work. You're trying to build a tall tower to the sky, right? So if you build the tower on top of Everest, so God did most of your work, and you'll build a little tower to get to the sky. But they said, no, we can't rely upon God. We're showing you the might of the human being. Human beings are powerful. And we can conquer the world. So we're going to build our tower starting in a valley, the lowest point we can find, and build up to show that we don't need God's help in this. It's all that same point as about being the actions of man, of mankind. No, man-made bricks are the way to go in a valley, and even so, we're going to build the tallest tower around. That was their attitude. And this whole point was as if man can force God into action. That was the goal which they had. The Nimrod was somebody, as we said, was their leader. Nimrod, the Torah speaks about, not at length, we know a little about Nimrod. He was an Ish Gibor Tzayin. He was a mighty man, a hunter, it says, and he became the king of the ancient world. One thing said about Nimrod, very interesting thing, is that Nimrod, the Evan Ezra says, Nimrod was somebody who used to capture wild animals and shech them as karbanos, offer them to God. Now we think Nimrod's this terribly wicked person. Why is he offering sacrifices to God? To Hashem. What's the significance of him catching wild animals and making sacrifices? So it's very important for us to note, a kosher karban is never a chaya. It's never a wild animal. It's always a behemoth. It's always a domestic animal. I mean, karbanos are goats, sheep, cows, lambs. Those are all animals which we call behemoths. They're docile farm animals, as it were. We don't offer chayos as karbanos. There are kosher chayos, such as a deer is a kosher chaya, but there's no such thing as a deer karban. It's not. It's pasul. It's not valid. What's the idea? Because Nimrod, he valued a chaya. Chayas show might. They show ambition. They show skill. For him, he related to the chaya. He related to the wild animals because he felt that's what I value. I value gvura. I value the strength of man. And I value the strength of all beings in this world. So therefore, Nimrod said, I'm not going to offer a cow to God. I'm not going to offer a goat to God. Those are these puny animals that don't show any ambition. They don't show any strength. They don't show any might. I'm going to offer a chaya to God. And the point is that Nimrod was showing what he was all about. Power. Power was what he was all about. It was the power of mankind, the power of the beings of this world. And even though he was offering it to God, he was saying, what I value here is the power which we have in this world. That was what Nimrod did. I would maybe toss in for a second. We're not totally innocent of this attitude either. We have this attitude sometimes. We look around the world this very day, and we see the incredible amount of technology and advances that human beings have made. And we've advanced in amazing ways. Medicine, technology, building. I mean, we can do things nowadays that they never dreamed of. And sometimes we ask ourselves, I mean, we hope we don't ask ourselves this, but people will say, look, who needs God? We could do it all. Look at us. What can't we do? You know, we can cure diseases, we can do surgeries, we can create iPhones and computers, we can make airplanes. What can't the human being do? So there are things we can't do. You know, at a certain point, somebody, you know, God forbid, is very sick, and doctors, you know, say we can't do anything more. We do have times like that. But the overall attitude in the world often is that the human being is extremely powerful and we can do so much. And the answer to that is, yeah, we are very powerful, but we have to recognize we have our limits. And number two, any power that we have is only because Hashem has endowed that upon us. It's from Hashem. Why is it that we have the ability to cure a disease or do a surgery? Because God's given us the wisdom for such a thing. He's placed into the world that wisdom and given the human being the brains and the skill to actually discover it and apply it. It's a humbling experience rather than a experience of arrogance. That's what it should be. People sometimes are arrogant and say, no, the human being can do so much, you know, what do you need God for? That attitude. There's a Mishnah in the end of Maseches Kiddushin which says a statement which at first, you know, sounds a little bit astonishing, let me understand it. It says, Tov Shebarofim LeGehenim. The best of doctors goes to Gehenim. The best doctor straight to Gehenim. So we think, well, doctors do amazing things. They help people. They cure people. They save lives. Why would the Mishnah say the best doctors go to Gehenna? So, just by the way, the Rambam was a doctor, and the Ramban was a doctor, and the great sage of the Gemara Shmuel was a doctor. I mean, we have plenty of great doctors, and they're not in the Gehenna, trust me. They're doing just fine. But the statement is a statement of the attitude a doctor might be at risk of developing. Let's say a doctor is somebody who is a very, very... It says the best doctors go to Gehenna. You're a very good doctor. And you've saved hundreds of lives in your career. Now, people come in, you have a heart surgeon who's dealing with major health issues daily and saving lives. So at a certain point, he can develop the attitude, no, life's in my hands. And you lose the sight of the fact that life's actually in God's hands. A doctor who's able to be effective and diagnose and cure, he thinks, I'm in control of human life. Now ultimately, if somebody is not a good doctor, it says Tov Shebrofim, if a bad doctor doesn't think that because he realizes that he messes up. But the good doctor could think that. And the Mishnah says we have that attitude. Well, that's an attitude that takes you straight to Gehenna, because that's an attitude of denying Hashem's role in this world. A doctor who has his head on straight understands that Hashem has given me the gift of being a doctor, the skills I have, the tools I have in my hands, that's all because Hashem has given me the wisdom, given me the skill to perform what I do, and therefore life's really in God's hands. There are stories about many, many very, very devout religious doctors who would always say a tefillah before performing surgery, before examining a patient, because you need Hashem's help. If you don't have Hashem's help, then what good is the doctor? The doctor is only good because Hashem allows him or her to perform the task at hand. That's why a doctor is effective. But I'm just pointing out that, you know, we are at risk of this attitude as well. It's not just Nimrod, it's not just their generation. Now, we live in a generation where humankind has advanced tremendously. And the amount of power we have is incredible. I always think the one thing we can't do is control the weather. That's something that's still out of our hands. Everything else we seem to have some sort of control over, but the weather is all in Hashem's hands. What?
Everyone's saying that it's our fault, right?
Oh, yeah, now that you're right. Now the things are fault, right?
We know that it's, whatever.
Correct, yeah, now I was saying, right, that the weather's our fault now too. That's correct, yeah. You're right, good point. It's interesting, because in Shemona Esrei, the place we daven for rain is the second bracha. And that bracha is the bracha of the Gevurah of Hashem. Hashem's might is where rain comes in. Because that's where Hashem's might. In the weather, you can't argue. Maybe people are arguing now, but you don't think you can argue with weather. But humans do have this attitude, and therefore we have to recognize, no, Nase Lanu Shem is not the attitude. It's to understand that Hashem has granted us all these abilities, all these advances, all this progress is because of Hashem. So at the end of the story, what happens? Hashem scatters people around, and he mixes up their languages. So number one, this allows that people will not bond together. Ever since that point, the human race has not been unified. There's always been disagreements, fighting, clashing cultures, for better or for worse. But that happens since then, because when they unify, we see that it brings them to no good. And they think they're too powerful than they are. That's number one. It allows other opinions to exist, so you can debate opinions, and even if in your country they don't like it, other countries do agree with your opinion. There's room for debate, there's room for discussion in the world, so other ideas can come forth. Then when you're dealing with the Soviet Union, it was so large and they couldn't get out, so then they were kind of stuck in a world like the Dora Fluga. But they know beyond the border there were people out there that did agree with them, and they could escape, if possible, to those people and be accepted. The according to the Rashbam, the purpose to populate the world got populated. Now everyone gets scattered about, languages developed, and the world is now populated with human beings. So we see the result of the story was that the world is, as we see it nowadays, a world of, of various cultures, various people, different languages, different beliefs, and that's the world we're in. Rashi poses a very important question. Why was the generation of the flood destroyed? And the generation of the Tower of Babel was just dispersed. They both sinned, so what's the difference between the two? So Rashi gives a very famous answer. The answer Rashi gives is because the Dor HaMabul, those who experienced the flood, they didn't have any achdus amongst themselves. No, they were fighting each other. And therefore, they deserve to be destroyed. The Dor HaFluga, the generation of the Tower of Babel, at least they were unified as people. So Hashem said, okay, I won't destroy you, I'll just disperse you. I'll scatter you about. Because the absolute worst offense for the human being would be when there is zero achdus in the world. If no one gets along, that's where Hashem says there's no hope for this world. If you're getting along, but you have the wrong ideals, the wrong attitudes, okay, we can leave you around and we can work with it. But if you're not getting along, then forget about it. So the difference in the two generations was the achdus versus having no achdus.
Okay. I also heard that with the mahul, it was they were sitting against each other. So Hashem destroyed them because Ben Adam Lechaviro was more important than Hashem said Ben Adam.
That's like I'm saying. That there's the achdus. It was working together. Yeah, being able to live together peacefully, work together, not steal from each other. Exactly. It's the other point you get from the story is that Hashem does desire the world does have various cultures, various people, various languages. That's part of the plan from the beginning. And it doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't want idolatry in the world. Hashem wants people to believe in the one and only God, but people can live different style lives, have different standards of living, have different cultures from within that they appreciate and they live within, and still appreciate one God. Just for instance, we have 12 Shvatim. The 12 tribes of Klai Yisrael are a little miniature of that. Hashem doesn't say, okay, there's one kind of Jew. Hashem says there's 12 families of Jews. Each one is different. Each Shevet did have their own unique lifestyle. They had a different culture. They had different professions. They had different traits. And, you know, probably different foods, different music. And probably everything that we look at as culturally different, they probably had as well. But they had one common thread, which is that they all believed in one God and they performed Torah mitzvos. But within that, you can still be an individual. So there's an idea of finding your tzibur that you associate with, but also you have your within that framework, you have your own interests and your own ideals and things that you personally are able to use to express yourself. But Hashem wants the world to develop in this way. There should be personalities, there should be self-expression, there should be individual nations out there. Every nation has something to offer the world. We know that classically from Parshas Noach, there's 70 different nations. We know the roots of all the world were 70 nations. And each one is supposed to offer the world a certain benefit. Each one has their own midah, their own trait, which they do offer us. And they're meant to develop and meant to bring to the world. It's supposed to be that way. If everybody was together as one, the world would be robbed of so much cultural wealth, so many developments, so much technology. Different types of foods, different types of music, different types of art. We wouldn't have it because everybody would be the same. And that's not what Hashem wants out of the world. The world should be different. There's a reason that the landscape is different in different countries. You know, if you fly to China, it looks very different than America. Even Western America looks different than Eastern America. If you go to Canada, it looks different than Mexico. And that itself is able to bring out in people different cultures and attitudes. But that makes the world a very rich place with so much that we can gain from different people. One of the concepts of the Jewish people in Galus, we have to go nation to nation, is to pick up the virtues of each nation. The fact that we were forced to spend time in so many countries, so we had a lot of struggles, but through that we also were able to pick up the virtues of those countries and incorporate them into Klal Yisrael, because each country is different. If it's all the same, there's nothing to gain from going anywhere. Why go on vacation? Why travel? Why see anything? Because there's nothing to gain. So that's Hashem's desire for the world. So if we were to maybe sum it up, the generation of Migdal Bavel, Tara Bavel, they are people who are focused on the power of man versus the power of God. They understood that mankind, to be powerful, has to be bonded together as one and unified, and that doesn't allow for any self-expression or anybody who's going to dissent. They valued the tzibur, the community, over the individual. They didn't care about individuals, they cared about more the purpose and the ideal of the human race as a whole. And Hashem said, this can't happen. Because the purpose of the world is that people should be, you know, there should be different approaches to life. People should have a freedom of expression. People should be able to develop their own culture and their own way to serve Hashem within the framework of Halacha and Torah, but their own way to serve Hashem. And if everyone bonds together as one, what it leads to is this rebellious attitude that there's no room for anybody to do anything different. As many Rishonim explain, this set the scene for Avraham Avinu. We're going to start talking about Avraham next week, God willing. That's our next topic. Next story is Avraham. And Avraham had to come on the scene and say, I disagree with the way that the world is running right now. Everyone's idolatrous, and I believe there's one God, and I'm going to make sure everyone knows about it. Avraham could not do that in society like the Dor HaPlugah. As we saw, he was thrown into the fiery furnace. Only because people got scattered about and there was some free rein in terms of intellectual discussion, could Avraham spread his ideas throughout the world. So this kind of lays the framework, lays the foundations of Avraham Avinu's task at hand, which is to spread Hashem's name to the world. So we'll start with him next week.
Thank you.